And back to verse 141. One should recite facing north, desiring peace, facing east for self-control, desiring to slay all adversity. One should face south, facing west will invite wealth. All of existence becomes mesmerized. All bonds are released. It is the cause of the love of the King of Gods, Indra. All beings in all worlds are controlled by it. It is the Lord of all, the cause of restriction of all iniquity, that which increases good attributes, and that alone which destroys evil action, that which produces the attainments of excellent action. It is the process of accomplishing imperfect effects, removing the fear of the nine planets, destroying bad dreams, and granting the fruit of good dreams. It is the eternal cause of all peace, the granter of children who desire, the cause of averting the widowhood of women, and always the giver of good fortune. That it we're talking about is the Guru Gita and the love of the devotees for the Guru. The bond between guru and disciple of devotion, it. One attains life, freedom from disease, and imperishable qualities for their children and their grandchildren through the generations. If recited by a widow or any woman without desire, she may attain self-realization. If recited without the prescribed way or with personal desires, then they will attain in another lifetime. See, if you attain your desires, then you have to come back. If all you desire is to be free from desire, then you can attain self-realization. But after, if you attain with a desire, if you recite and you attain that desire, then obviously you have to come back and sing it again for the next desire. And so on, until what we desire is the end of all desires. All pain, fear, obstacles, and curses will be removed. All obstacles will be removed. The ideal of perfection, the necessities for attainment, the perfection of all desires, and liberation. Chaturbharga, the four objectives of manifesting in a body. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma, the ideals of perfection. Artha, the necessities for the attainment of that ideal. Kama, the perfection of all desires. And that is liberation, when those three are taken care of. Whatever desires are contemplated wherever, then and there, they will be attained without a doubt. What could you desire if you're really in love with the Guru? Whatever desires are contemplated, then and there, they're fulfilled. If you're in love with the Guru, if you have that quality of respect for the Guru, then the desire is certainly a pure contemplation. It's not selfishness. It is the cow which fulfills all desires of one who is desirous and allows one to attain the thinkable and the unthinkable. It is the gem of all thoughts to the thoughtful and the cause of all welfare. For one who always recites desiring liberation, he will attain the radiance of liberation. For one who recites desiring enjoyment, to him it grants the fruit of desire. It should be recited by the worshippers of Shakti, the sun, Ganapati, Vishnu, and Shiva. O goddess, it will give attainment. It is true without a doubt. O giver of boons, now I speak of the places to recite for the fulfillment of desire. At the sea, on the bank of a river, or in a temple of Vishnu or Shiva, or in the temple of Shakti or any other god, where cows reside. You'll see when we get to Iowa, we've been playing in a barn. Or where any god resides is pure. Well, this must be a very pure place because there are lots of gods here. under a banyan tree. We did that for many times. At the feet of the Creator, in a field, or in the forest of delight. In a pure and beautiful place, always one should perform the vows of purifying austerities. Even without understanding or in silence, one can offer this recitation. In the cremation grounds and any other fearful place, or at the root of a banyan tree, perfection may be attained. At the root of a datura tree, the thornwood apple tree, or near a mango tree. The children of the guru, the disciples, though they may be fools, can attain to perfection in all pure actions, such as initiation, performance of vows, and purifying austerities. Others cannot. If you accept the guru, as we accept the guru, we become the children of the guru. We can attain to perfection even though we may be fools. We may not have intellectual understanding, but our hearts are in the right place. In order to destroy the dirt of the world of objects and relationships, to free from the bonds of worldly attachment, the knowers of the principles should always take the bath of the Guru Gita. He actually becomes the guru, and always the knower of the Supreme Divinity. Wherever he may go, all places become pure without a doubt. Wherever he resides, he maintains his own attitude, completely pure within and without. There in his presence, the multitude of the gods and all places of pilgrimage will inhabit. Situated in a sitting posture or reclining, moving still, or speaking, riding upon a horse or riding upon an elephant, or sleeping or awake, with a pure mind, always the wise will make recitation of the Guru Gita. By merely having the intuitive vision of such a one, another life, another birth will not be known. You become one with consciousness, which moves, migrates from body to body. Another birth will not be known. You become one in the same consciousness. One, you're just fixed in the love of the guru. And that love propels you from incarnation to incarnation. Don't even worry about leaving your body, and don't worry about accepting the next one.
You never leave that state.
Once you're in love, you just stay there.
You never forget your true nature once you've attained this state.
Well, some of us do. I can't give any promises, but I'm just reciting the scripture. And it says, by merely having the intuitive vision, when you have that intuitive vision, you enter into that timeless zone. And when you're in that timeless zone, you can stay there eternally until your time is up. And then the time comes back. And while you're there, what do you think about? What do you think about when you're in love? There's no way to describe what you think about when you're in love. You stop thinking. And becomes timeless. And that's why we all love to fall in love. All perfection, the enjoyment of the fruits of their karma, without a doubt. It is true. It is true. Again, it is true. This is the ideal of perfection elucidated by me. There is nothing equal to the Guru Gita. It is the truth. It is the truth, O giver of boons. There is one divinity, one ideal of perfection, one allegiance, the highest austerity. The Guru is the highest of the highest. There is no other principle beyond the Guru. Blessed is the mother, blessed is the father, blessed is the family, and blessed is the lineage. Blessed is the earth, O goddess, because of he who has devotion to the guru, which is so difficult of attainment. This body, these organs of action and knowledge, this life force and objective of being, one's own near and dear and friends, mother, father, family, oh goddess, all are only the guru without a doubt. This is really cool. This is really cool. All are only the guru, without a doubt. Get the message? It's about God. All. The guru is in all. And every one of them reflects the guru to us perfectly if we train ourselves to perceive it. Through timeless births, tens of millions of repetitions of mantras, sacred vows, all purifying austerities performed, O goddess, all of the excellent fruits attained are merely from the satisfaction of the guru. Those people who only with the strength of their knowledge perform purifying austerities and do not perform seva, selfless service as an expression of love to the guru, they are unfortunate. It is true, O giver of boons. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, the divine seers, the ancestors and celestial beings, the attained beings, the protectors of wealth, and other munis and sages, all men of wisdom, only through him, the guru, do they attain. The attitude of the guru is the highest place of pilgrimage, and all other places of pilgrimage are without meaning in comparison. All the places of pilgrimage reside, O goddess, in the big toe of the guru's foot, O giver of boons. By means of recitation, one attains to victory. One attains to infinite fruits, renouncing all confusing actions and all depressing places. By performing recitation in a confused place, one attains the fruit of confused actions. Recite the Guru Gita in a journey, in a battle, in a dilemma, or any limitation. The recitation confers victory, and in death bestows liberation. All the actions of the children of the Guru attain to perfection all the time. I have explained this secret because you are beloved to me. Make every effort to keep it hidden. Protect the secret. Don't let anyone who's not a devotee disparage the love of the guru or demean the love of the guru. Keep it secret. Just demonstrate it in your behavior. We don't have to talk about it outside. We'll talk about it inside. But many people have their own attitudes and their own ideas, and let them be content with their ideas. Those who wish to learn and understand our ideas, we will share the secret. That's why there's so few people present. The highest master, Ganesh, and other gods, Vishnu and others, they keep this in their mind and do not speak it aloud to others. This is true, thus I have spoken. We're not going out to proselytize or to convert the world. We want to convert ourselves, make ourselves devotees to the guru. We're not going to sell incense in the airports or beg on the streets of New York. We're going to be devotees. At least that's our objective. And if people like to come, we'll share, without a doubt, the love that's in our hearts. This is true. To one whose consciousness is extremely pure, who has full faith and devotion, to such a one this may be explained, O my beloved. You are my own soul eternally. To one devoid of devotion, to a cheater, an evil being filled with deceit. To such persons, do not ever speak or even mentally convey the Guru Gita. It is the one mantra by which to cross the ocean of objects and relationships, samsara. Sam means all, and sara means the ocean, and the ocean of all. All the objects that come into manifestation and the relationships between them, the samsara. It is the one mantra by which to cross this ocean of objects and relationships. The mantra by which to attain the perfection of worship of Brahma, other gods, and munis. The mantra which destroys affliction, pain, and the disease of worldly attachment. Praise the mantra which takes away all fear, the mantra which proclaims the Guru as king. Thus ends the last section of the respected Skanda Purana, in which Ishwar told to Parvati, the complete Guru Gita, make offering at the feet of the respected Gurudev. Any questions? Please.
142, Shiva.
Yes.
All of existence becomes vegetarized. All binds are released. It is because of love of the kings and gods. All beings and all worlds are controlled by it. All of existence becomes mesmerized.
Right, all the worldliness becomes mesmerized. We become free from all the worldliness. We don't even see it as worldliness. We see it as an opportunity to demonstrate our love. All existence becomes mesmerized. They just fall in love with the Guru. What happens when you fall in love? You become mesmerized. I mean, you stop even thinking logically. Your heart takes over. And our relationship with God is not just an intellectual study. It's a real love affair. It's a romance that's cultivated so that we really feel the privilege. And all the worldliness and all the selfishness becomes mesmerized. We can't even pay attention to it. Are there other questions? Please, go on.
176.
Sure.
By performing recitation in a confused place, maintain the Guru's confused actions, recite the Guru Gita in the room, the battle, the dilemma, or any limitation. I remember when we were at Concord, Swami, that was a very confused atmosphere in that first house. I mean,
I'm sorry to disagree with you, but I never saw it as confused.
No, not us. No, I know you didn't. Then we could go anywhere. We could go into Hara Station. There's a confused atmosphere.
It wasn't confusing to me.
No, this is what I'm wondering. That's why I asked the question. Because if there is no confusion, you can go any place, and every place is appropriate.
Yes! Absolutely.
So they were just saying for...
If you are confused and you recite the Guru Gita, you're going to contemplate your confusion. And that's true of the Chandi or any other scripture. Those asuras are attacking and shooting the arrows of confusion at you. And if you do recite in a confused state of mind, you're in a confused place, you're going to contemplate your confusion. Now, there are two effects that could evolve from that situation. One effect is that you say, oh my gosh, this confusion is overwhelming. And you succumb to the confusion and get up from your asana in a confused state and produce the behavior of confused actions. The other possibility is that you surrender the confusion and remember the Divine Mother and remember the Guru. And it no longer ceases to be confusing. We have no problems. We only have solutions. And we focus on the solutions. So then we're not attaining the fruit of confusion.
Because the effect of sitting there and
contemplating your confusion.
Now going through it to the other side means that this is having the effect, the desired effect, and that's why we do it.
Okay. Well, if we have the pure love and the faith in the guru, then we can surrender the confusion, and it ceases to be confusion. It becomes an opportunity for me to demonstrate my love by facing the circumstances that I'm required to face anyway, and facing them with faith and love and confidence and do the right thing and not be afraid. So, therefore, if you're reciting in a confused place, you must be in a confused space. And if you're in a confused space, you're forgetting. The only reason we accept confusion is because we forget that we're children of the guru. Because the children of the guru attain to perfection in every action all the time. Win, lose, or draw. They attain to perfection in every action all the time because they are sincere in their action. They're doing it for the guru. They're demonstrating their love for the guru, at striving for the highest degree of efficiency in every action. Because that's the way they show the guru that, hey, I'm really sincere about this. I'm not just playing games or giving platitudes or lip service to things that I think you want to hear. This is a sincere desire, and I want to be a child of God. And I really believe that you can take me there. So I'm doing it to the best of my ability, whatever it is. If it's chopping wood or carrying water, I'm going to chop that wood with so much love. And carry it with so much generosity, because this is my offering to the guru. So now we're eradicating the confusion, because the confusion only exists in relationship to selfishness. Is there any other confusion? I don't know of it. And if I can surrender the selfishness to love, then I eradicate the confusion. So this verse is talking a lot about people who are caught up in their selfishness and justifying their selfishness, and are feeling the burdens of confusion because of their selfishness, and recite the Guru Gita contemplating their selfish interest. And they get the fruit of confusion. The children of the Guru, they're in love with the Guru. They're surrendered to the Guru. They accept any fruit the Guru will give. Then they get the fruit of surrender. Whether the guru is right or wrong doesn't make any difference. The disciple becomes enlightened. The very fact that they love so much makes them enlightened. Any other questions?
The four directions for doing the sadhana.
Yes.
Would this make any difference to us? Would we notice any difference if we face south rather than north?
No. For us, we are still striving to make our asana comfortable, to not think about our bodies. We're still striving to pronounce the Sanskrit correctly without stumbling over all the syllables or gargling with a mouthful of mothballs or marbles. We're still striving to even have some understanding what the text is saying to us while we're reciting it. So we're students, and we're not claiming to be masters. We are sadhus who are striving to learn more about it. We're cultivating the knowledge and the understanding. We're cultivating the practice, trying to get our knees down on the ground, trying to get a backbone straight, trying to get our lives in order so that we can even do this with a free mind, without having so much of the world pulling us back, saying, oh, you got to get a job, you got to get some money, you got to pay the bills, you got to pay the grocer, We're not trying to be masters at this point. All of us are striving to become a little bit better. And we'll be content with small increments. So for the time being, I suggest you face the altar. I suggest you face the fire. If you're not near the altar or the fire, I suggest you face north for peace and for wisdom. We are Vaishnavas, the worshippers of Vishnu or Krishna or Ram or any of the incarnations. They usually faced east. And the worshippers of Shiva and Shakti, whose primary worship is all the time or any time, they usually face north. So those are two criteria. When we perform the Shraddh, the memorial service in honor of our departed ancestors, we face south. And of course, you can face west, desiring wealth, Kubera, Boruna. There's a vidhi for facing west. We don't have to do it. Our wealth is the wealth of peace, the wealth of love, the wealth of joy. We're looking for internal riches. I assume you've been living in your car for the last 5 years. You know, but here
it died facing north.
Your car will be reborn as a rishi, and he'll come as a rishi's conveyance, as a Porsche. The Volkswagen will become a Porsche. All right, something like that. So yeah, so we're not actually praying for money. So I see no benefit in turning yourself around the compass and trying to follow all of these different things.
But in an advanced stage,
it will make a difference in some stages.
Shiva Balaram Yogi.
Yes, I remember the story.
He had to do tapasya in four directions for 2 to 3 years, and one of the directions was extremely difficult. There were terrible problems, and maybe that was the south direction you said. You face your affliction.
Yes, the south, you face the Pitri, it's the Pitri's lok, and For departed spirits reside in the south. And there are many energies which come in that direction. Many of the guys who live in the cremation grounds face south. And much of the sadhana that is performed in the cremation grounds pays attention to those kinds of energies. I personally, at this point, face north as much as I can. I'm an Uttarmukhi sadhu, and my yantra is designed to face north. I can put it in the east, but then I have to turn all the lines. And when I turn all the lines, 45 degrees, everything will change. The position of the gods and goddesses who sit on the yantra will change. So I'm an Uttarmukhi sadhu that puts my yantra so that I can face north. And it makes it a lot easier for me because I don't have to translate. I have to translate when I face in different direction. I have to put the flowers in a different order.
Well, like when we do the Maheshwar, does it matter where we put the flowers?
There is nowhere where he's not. So you can put his flowers everywhere, all over him. He likes that. He likes the love of the devotees. Any other questions?
172.
172. What is the question?
Could you explain the verse a little more?
Are those people who only perform purifying austerities with the strength of their knowledge and do not perform seva or selfless service to the guru, they are unfortunate. Because of their egotism, the adage says, there's a beautiful problem, satya vidya binoy bhavati. It says that true knowledge confers humility. And if you have true knowledge, then you want to serve your guru. So those students who, with the strength of their ego, put all their faith in their own egotism, and they perform austerities, and they don't serve the guru, and they don't demonstrate their love for the guru, they're unfortunate. Somewhat, it could be. But if they do it from the strength of their knowledge and not from love for the guru, then they're unfortunate. There's a certain bhava, an attitude with which we do things. And that's what is the key to adjudicating whether it's a pure action or a selfish action. It's not what we do. We all have bodies, and we have to chop wood and carry water. No question. Now how, with what bhava, with what attitude, do we chop the wood and carry the water? That's the issue. That's the only issue. We must chop wood and carry water. There, as long as you have a body, you're going to have to bring the nutrition in and take the refuse out. You have action to perform. With what attitude can we perform that action? That's the only issue that we're discussing. Are we saying, gee, I want more for me? Or are we saying, what a privilege it is to serve the guru inside? What a privilege it is to maintain this organism so that I can use it to share greater love and greater joy outside, and make the guru's creation even better because I was here. What is the function of this organism while you have it? You're going to live with it for 90, 100, or 150 years. What do you want it to accomplish in the time that it's here? So those who perform purifying austerities only from the egotism of their own knowledge. I'm going to show them and become the great yogi. They're unfortunate. And those people who say, I can surrender and become a servant of the guru, I become a servant of God, they are the ones who are very fortunate. They're the ones who attain. And blessed is the mother, and blessed is the father, and blessed is the kingdom where such people reside. Does that explain? Any other questions? Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Jai Ma.
Swami, there's something came to mind. When our books wear out, they get old. Is there a proper way to dispose of them?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Throw them in the garbage and get another one.
Is that all? Don't they have a lot of energy?
They have lots of
the fire to the gods would be a good
thing. I don't think you want to throw them in the fire. No, we got other things to do. I don't have any recommendation about that.
Some fires,
huh?
Like the calendars. I found somebody put the calendars in the garbage. And
Mom
and Swami's pictures on them.
Wow, that's where I came from. Why shouldn't I go back? No big deal.
Put them in the fire.
What fire?
Disrespected.
Oh. Don't make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
We got stuff to do with our lives. Don't get caught up on the little stuff.
Yeah.
Huh? Don't get caught up with it. It served its purpose. What are you going to do?
Recycle it.
That's a great idea. Yeah, recycle it. Yeah.
So
I know you once said, don't put your foot on the book.
Yes. Don't do that. The book is the emblem of Saraswati.
But then you put it in the
dump. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, when you take a new book, bring your old ones to me. I'll take care of them. I'll take out the garbage. I have no problem. just get a new one and give me the old ones. Huh? Yeah, I'll do it properly. Huh. See how much paper goes out of my office every day. I don't know what they do with it. I think they recycle it. I hope so. You know, I'm not real. You become a real well-rounded individual who's got the juice. You know what your goal is, and you focus on your goal, and you know how many ways there are to get there. And now you take your energy and apply it with all the sincerity of the effort that you choose to make. And it's just a question of defining those values and defining that goal. But once we do, and we make that commitment, the rest is academic. You'll find by reading many scriptures, you'll get more language, you'll get more understanding, you'll get more bhava, you'll get more practices, you'll get more attitude, more ideas of how your attitude can be expressed. This Guru Gita says the vehicle of the guru is the most beautiful way of expressing your love and devotion. And now when we study other scriptures, we'll find other the most beautiful ways. And they're all vehicles. They're all vehicles. And a good driver can get in any car and just step on the gas pedal and figure out how to drive. After you've been driving a while, it doesn't make any difference if it's a Ford or a Chevrolet. Or a Nash Rambler. Or a Plymouth. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, going back to our days, drove Nash Ramblers and Plymouths. Yeah. So it doesn't matter. If you can drive one, you can drive them all. And the same when you become a lover of Sanskrit. You can pick up any scripture and it's yours. And you become a lover of God. And all the bhavas fit. You can see them right there. So we can move from culture to culture or temple to temple and feel right at home wherever we go. Because we're empowered with the grace of the guru.
Did your guru, he must have been in a family where he learned Sanskrit a lot early when he was young. I mean, and then just grew with it.
I can't tell you. I can only tell you that he knew it very well when I met him. I don't know what age he started, and I don't know what age he left, but I do know that he knew it very well.
Did you study it?
I studied it at many universities.
I mean, as far as the formal training. Yeah.
Will the intuitive meanings of the mantras eventually make themselves known to us through the practice, or will we have to actually go get a Sanskrit dictionary and start looking up the root words in order to get that understanding?
No, you know, if you look up the words in the dictionary, you're going to get the intellectual meanings of the words. The intuitive meaning comes through love and practice. Love and practice, those are the two things. Part of the practice is study. Now, I would suggest that you have a book of translations, it's not necessary to go look up every word in the dictionary. Because I already did it, to spare you the effort. But read the translation. Don't just put it in the garbage when you're done with it. Read the translations, because the more you understand it intellectually, I mean, they mean something. And there's a lot of juice in them. I mean, the meaning is so profound sometimes that it just knocks my socks off. See? The meaning is quite profound. So if you study the meanings and practice and allow yourself the privilege of falling in love, allow yourself the privilege of falling in love. Don't guard your heart. Let go and trust. When that will happen, then the meanings will wake up. You just wake up. So many of us are hanging on to our own idea of what it should be like. And when we allow ourselves the privilege of getting into that romance and just getting in there totally and saying, well, I surrender. I've got nothing to lose. What are you going to take from me? I give myself over to this practice, to this tradition, to this philosophy, to this belief system, 100%. What can I lose?
You.
That's the only thing. But most of us are saying, no, I'll give you this much. I'll just give a little bit. And I'm hanging on for dear life. Why doesn't it wake up for me? Why isn't it working for me? It must be the practice that's wrong. Namaste.